zombie ants clambering up through the drainage system. As is the American custom, fear and anxiety were filtered through pop culture. Dr. Strangelove, On the Beach, Godzilla, and other mutated monsters created by radiation. More painful even than the low-level trickle-down dread of mutants and annihilation was the indifference of America to North Dakota's probable fate. TV was all surfers and cowboys and private eyes and baseball. Fantasies and big city problems, extortion, embezzling, cigarettes and beer. James Bond will save us. Relax, if you can. Then, without warning, I moved away from North Dakota, and the Cold War ended. The missiles of my childhood were bundled up and put into storage. The silos became museums. Fear receded, but did not vanish. Some missiles went away, others appeared, as if by magic. Instead of drunken, doddering old Russian men squinting at the red button, we now had secret hideouts. Invisible fingers. Does Israel have the bomb or not? What about Pakistan? Do we go to war with Iran to stop them from getting one? And we have some portly young man in North Korea threatening to unleash missiles on the coast of California, where I live. I got out of North Dakota to get away from this stuff and live inside a Perry Mason rerun fantasy of blackmail, fraud, and frame-ups, and nuclear paranoia is a no-no. But no, the Cold War and total annihilation once again rear their ugly heads. North Dakota, in its cycle of boom and bust, moved through the Cold War and oil booms and fracking booms and back to its cold oblivion. Cold northern Swedes and Germans who settled there because they could go no further. Calvinists, we're doomed. We probably deserve it. People in California and New York like to complain that North Dakota gets as many senators as they do. Well, you take the silos next time then. Put the missiles under the Hollywood Bowl or Times Square, which will also be homeless encampments. Because America itself is a sad little town now. Better days behind us. Can't even have a parade without a corporate sponsor. No animals in the circus. Nothing to watch but Avengers and Star Wars. Except for there is a next time, there won't be another next time, will there? Oh, well, maybe climate change will get us first. I'll see you in the bunker, unless I see you first. I gotta go.
Holding hands at midnight, 'neath the starry sky. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of KALW Local Public Radio San Francisco and the trustees of Leland Stanford Junior University, copyright 2019.
Our executive producer is Tina Pamantuan. Special thanks to Merle Kessler, Micah Cash, Momo Kutatak, Becky Barron, Eric Westfall, and Joel Gonzalez.
Thanks also to our musical guest, Jeff Chambers on bass, Adam Schulman on piano, Leon Joyce on drums, and Tiffany Austin on vocals.
The senior producer of Philosophy Talk is Devin Strolovich. Laura McGuire is our director of research. Our marketing director is Cindy Prince-Baum. And Dan Brandon is our technical director.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from Stanford University and the partners at our online community of thinkers.
The views expressed, or sometimes mis-expressed, in this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders, not even when they're true and reasonable.
The conversation continues on our website, philosophytalk.org, where you, too, can become a partner in our community of thinkers. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.
Nice work if you get it. And if you get it, won't you tell me how? Whoa, 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 won't you tell me how?
This is DJ Marie, former host of the Equinox program, program director, music director, promotions coordinator at WHFR Radio. I started listening as a college student, and I was inspired to join by a former DJ who had a show called Life According to Larry. I met some of the most amazing people here while volunteering and still continue to enjoy music to this day. For today and in the future, we need to keep radio alive. Let's get back to our roots with local independent broadcasts. Donate at www.whfr.fm to make your important contribution to WHFR.
It's time to start thinking about warmer days and more time outside. On sunny days, think about how great it would be to be wearing a pair of slide flip-flop sandals with your favorite radio station printed right on the Velcro strap. For a gift during this Radiothon pledge of $60, we will send you a thank you gift that includes these comfortable blue slide-on sandals. Calling 313-845-9676 and selecting option one will get you this thank you gift as part of our Rainy Day Fund replenishment efforts. If you'd like a new pair of flip-flop sandals and want to support WHFR with a gift of $60, please call now, 313-845-9676, option 1. If you are unable to call now, at your convenience, you can also go to our website, whfr.fm, to make a secure donation online. This is the station making waves and getting you ready for the beach during our once-a-year Radiothon pledge drive, whfr.fm.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Welcome to this Radiothon edition of WHFR Journal. This is our local news and views talk show that we are proud to present every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on 89.3 FM WHFR. Maybe you're listening on the web today at WHFR.fm. Either way, we're so glad you're here. I'm Susan McGraw, along with Alan Mazurek, my colleague, co-host, producer, editor, and friend. And Alan, happy Radiothon 2022.
I like that last descriptor best, but yes, happy Radiothon as well, Susan. It's been a great week so far, and obviously still some work to do for all of our loyal listeners. It has been great to obviously have your support through the years, and for those of you who have participated so far, it's been great to have your support this week. If you haven't had a chance to do it yet, don't worry, stand by. We'll find ways to make sure that you have that opportunity to do that and become involved with WHFR, not only as a listener, but as one of the many, many folks who help make it possible here at 89.3 and online at WHFR.fm. Great to be back for another edition of the WHFR Journal. May in full effect, Radiothon winding down today and tomorrow, but there's still lots of things going on and lots of stuff to talk about here at Henry Ford College and in the city of Dearborn. We hope to spend some time doing that on today's program.
Yes, we are excited and proud to be a focal point on the campus at Henry Ford College, the main Evergreen campus. We have multiple campuses, but what we love about our campus is that the powers that be are always working to make it a more visually pleasing space, a more ergonomically pleasing space, just a more effective use of the space that we have, but also a more environmentally conscious and sustainable space. We are on Evergreen Road. It doesn't get much more environmental than Evergreen, right? I mean, that's kind of the way I look at it. Our logo prior to, those of us that have been here a really long time or have been at the school as a student, you remember our other logo, our former logo before we started with the driving, the Henry Ford angle, was the tree, the green, you know, the tree, the beautiful, robust tree. And that's still in a lot of places on our campus. It's sort of an homage to kind of how we started. But while we are still sort of driving to keep students on the right path and all of those kinds of things, we want to do so environmentally conscious, right? So we're taking the EV approach to driving our students to the best place in their careers.
You can't be future driven if you're not future responsible. How's that? Is that a good way of summing it up? Yep. All right.
I love it. Yeah, there is no future if you're not doing those things. And so while we don't necessarily have this doom and gloom approach to this topic, as I know some do, and maybe rightly so. But what I love about this campus is that we as employees, as staff and faculty, have an opportunity to get involved in things that are passionate, that we are passionate about, that are important to us. One of those things is an organization that exists. It's been here for a little while now, and it's called Sustainable HFC. I just love the name, just Sustainable HFC. It's keeping HFC sustainable. Both our facilities, our sort of our mental way of being, but also making sure that everybody that crosses through here comes out with a stronger mindset in that subject matter. And I am a proud member of the committee, the Sustainable HFC Committee. And we have invited into our show today another very prolific member of the organization who I think like-minded has some very important important thoughts about this whole topic of going green, being green, staying green, and all that kind of thing. And so we'll be joined in just a moment with Elizabeth Hall Knight, who is an assistant to the Associate Dean of STEM, the School of STEM at Henry Ford College, but also wearing the hat of a sustainable HFC member today. And I think, Alan, as we talk about Radiothon 2022, one of the things that makes WHFR unique is that we provide this kind of voice for things that are happening in our own backyard. It's not about the international news or the national news or even the metro news that every other station tends to talk about. It's about what's happening right here, what's growing in our own, you know, our own 5 acres right here on our property that is most important, we think, and most pressing to our campus community and our community at large. And I'm really proud to be a part of this station, but also this show that you and I have been working on together for a long time now, to be a mouthpiece for events, organizations, and important topics locally driven that don't often get that voice. So thank you for supporting me in that.
it is an ongoing pursuit, and there's always things to talk about. As always, we try to find a way to make them timely as well as topical. And I guess probably, you know, here as we wrap up Radiothon and replenishing our rainy day fund and spring, the season of renewal, and also Earth Day coming up, it only makes sense to talk about things that are going on when it revolves around a sustainable HFC, obviously. So yeah, let's get into that. You mentioned our guest that's coming up. So let's obviously you have some involvement there, but let's bring Elizabeth Hall Knight ask her involvement with sustainable HFC, the history of it, and then we'll go from there. Let's just sort of start at the very beginning. Why was this an issue?
Yeah. Well, we wanted to find ways to make our campus more sustainable for people who are interested in things like recycling, electric car charging, and planting trees, and all of those things. So I was invited by a former member of Sustainable HFC, my friend Zach. He organized this group and built it up for us. And he invited me and I joined, and we took... Over the pandemic, we didn't really miss a beat. We kept it going. So I'm proud to say that the pandemic did not destroy Sustainable HFC. We're still here, and we still have lots of exciting things going on and coming up.
Well, I find that interesting because I remember back in the early days of the pandemic, you know, I mean, and obviously economy shutting down, it's kind of like, oh, there's this much less pollution in the air. And, you know, there was this hope that maybe, obviously as things have changed, you know, old habits do die hard. But it's good to see we haven't, you know, lost a step when it comes to that. Specifically the space, at least the main campus at Henry Ford College, certainly from my awareness of it and the history of it along the Rouge River watershed, certainly an area where environmental renewal has been a big topic for the last 10 or 15 years and gained momentum compared to what it was 50 or 60 years ago. It seems very timely and topical for Henry Ford College and sort of, you know, if that's part of the thinking or the mission or the history of the entire group.
Yeah, for sure. And it takes a lot of volunteer work around campus to keep things going. We have the rain garden right outside of the science building that is maintained by former faculty and the Student Environmental Association. Mary Paracunnell's environmental science class does a lot of work to keep it clean and keep the invasive plants out and keep it a happy place for butterflies that are migrating to stop off here on campus. So we're so grateful for all the volunteer work that people do to keep things like that going.
Now, is sustainable HFC, is it, what's the word I'm looking, is it extracurricular, or does it also involve things like green energy initiatives and other academic pursuits and programs involved that go on at the college?
So we do make recommendations right now. We're working with our facilities department on possibly getting some car charging stations on campus. We have a little bit of an infrastructure upgrade that we need first, but it's definitely on the table, and Sustainable HFC is going to be making a recommendation for those charging stations to the college.
Yeah, nice. And I'm gonna today, Alan, be both host and sustainable HFC member too. If Liz doesn't mind, because I'm, as she knows, everybody on this committee is very passionate about.
As long as we're upfront about that as well. So yeah, no,
yeah,
I
there
certainly,
you go. So I'm a member.
From a journalistic perspective, certainly appreciate that honesty.
Absolutely.
Let's go. Yeah,
want to be honest about it. But what I'm most proud of, I think, is some of the stuff that I think. You know, people sit around and complain and they talk about, I'm throwing this paper in the garbage can. I hate doing that, but that's what I do because there it is. You know, instead of just complaining about it and still doing these habits that we should not be having, you know, this organization is doing things about it, is making things available for options for these green alternatives, as we call it. One of the things in our student center building right outside the station that I love is that we've got the plastic recycling bin. We've got the glass recycling bin. We've got the paper and cardboard bin. And boy, that makes me feel better, because then I don't have to bring all the stuff home that I usually lug home that I'm not going to throw in the trash. That's not who I am, you know. But for some people, it's just easy. It's just easier to just toss it in the garbage can. But these are options that need to be there. They need to be available. And rather than just talking about them, this organization, this committee is actually doing things about them. And I'll let Liz share what I think is one of the most exciting things. I'm a very anti-plastics kind of a person, still working to get straws, you know, plastic straws outlawed in fast food and the industry, because it just drives me nuts.
I get it from an intellectual standpoint, but it's just not the same. Not to play devil's advocate here, but why is that important? To you personally, Susan. Now I'm turning the table here, so I get to be the interviewer, right?
Yeah, because of the plastic that I see in videos that just washes up on beaches and is killing our animals because they're choking on these things in the water, and then, you know, communities that don't have good, trash and, people that like clean up their communities and their neighborhoods. It's just junk. It's just junk. And it doesn't go anywhere for like 5,000 years. And why are we doing that? You know, this isn't going away. That's not what we mean when we say sustainable. You know, we mean something very different. And so other communities are doing more, some are doing less, but we are doing something. And, you know, not only in America, but in the state of Michigan, but even most importantly, again, the area that we have some control over, which is our campus community. And so, Liz, tell us a little bit about the bottle
refills
thing. The refill stations. Love it.
So the way back when plastic was first invented, it wasn't really intended to be these plastic products that stay around for thousands of years that we only use for 5 minutes, cups, straws, lids, and things like that. And the really unfortunate thing is that when you see the graphics that say, oh, it takes 500 years for a plastic bag to break down, it really doesn't go away. It just breaks down into microplastics. So it's still in our ecosystem. It's still in the water and it's poisoning our fish. And then we eat the fish. You know how it goes. So one thing that we're doing to cut down on plastic bottle usage for water is we have our refill stations around campus that are drinking fountains that also have a bottle refill where you just push the bottle up against it and it fills your bottle, and it keeps a count on the station of how many bottles it have been kept out of the garbage. And the number is just staggering just from one station, let alone having multiple stations on campus. It's really nice.
Well, and certainly in the COVID era, where a lot of the drinking fountains were turned off, you've got your own bottle, you can fill it up. Maybe it has an unintended benefit when it comes to that, and keeping yourself safe as well. So,
sure.
All right. So campus hydration stations, and you did touch on another thing, and this sort of, I want to circle back to what you were talking about, Susan, with the bins. We've got one for plastic, one for paper, and the other one says landfill. Which means that you really need to think about where that is going when you put something in that bin as well. So what kinds of things, you know, go in that landfill? Just throw it all in there, right? Let the world figure it out. What kinds of things go in landfill?
Yeah, anything that can't go into any of those other bins, really. But if we don't have those other bins, everything goes in there.
Everything would go in there. Yeah.
And we know what a landfill looks like. I mean, I just drive down the road right by my house and I see this beautiful green mountain. But then when I get close to that beautiful green mountain, I realize that it is a mountain of garbage. It is a landfill with toxic gas coming out of it. And what is that fire for? It's protecting it from, you know, exploding. And it's getting bigger and bigger. And that's intruding on our play areas for our children and our gardens and our, you know, fresh air and all that kind of thing. So yeah, it would be nice to be able to have a compostable section and, you know, composting. We talk about the plastic straws versus the paper straws. I've had some really good paper straws, I got to tell you, but even the compostable straws are better than the plastic straws. You know, even something that's made of, and I know corn sometimes gets a bad rep because it, the way it's manufactured and so on, but, Liz, as you know, our mindset isn't we want to blast people that don't have similar beliefs. And it also isn't we're going to change the world overnight. But the mindset is at Sustainable HFC, we can make some baby steps forward. We can do some little things that are going to be measurable and make a difference. That's why those hydration stations have those counters on them, because that's a rude awakening when somebody sees that. It's like, wow, this many bottles are now not going to be, you know, under my feet or in the ocean or in the beautiful Great Lakes, which are getting, you know, filthier and filthier. And so it's about small measurable victories. And some of them come from the ground or, you know, what we're putting in the ground, but other ones are growing from the ground. And maybe we could talk a little bit about the tree planting project that we've got going on. We have to give a shout out to Linda Brandt, right?
And Ellie.
She is a wonderful former biology instructor and, coordinator of so many wonderful projects, and talk about sustainable, you know, sustainable Linda Brandt. And she is still with us. She's retired now, but still with us as a member of the organization. But, she has made it her mission to get more trees on our campus, planted on our campus. Liz, tell our listeners a little bit about the project that we've got going on and how it can have some sort of deep seated, really beautiful meaning to people that are involved in that project.
Sure. So we have several years of tree planting planned out. Last year, I believe in April, 5 or 7 were planted. And this year we were hoping to plant another 5 or 7. We just need a little more funding, which can be made through the foundation, our tree fund. And you can flag your donation to go toward tree planting. And if you would like to commemorate a special person or a special person, then you can also purchase a plaque for $50 extra, which $250 is about the cost of one tree if you would like to buy one tree. And then $50 would be a plaque with the wording that you would choose to commemorate your person or event. But other than that, we would just love to see more trees get planted on our campus, more green and more oxygen.
And for more information, since we're talking about more, one of the places to go to get more information about sustainability initiatives at Henry Ford College is simply hfcc.edu/sustainability. And obviously, spring is, as we always talk about, the time of renewal, things coming on. Are there any events or opportunities for the campus community to engage with sustainability activities that are going on here at Henry Ford College coming up in the near future? Yeah.
Please look for an announcement, hopefully coming up very soon. We're working with the foundation and our available tree fund balance now to try and get some things planted for Earth Day and or Arbor Day, which is coming up very quickly here. And we would love to have any members of the campus and community with us when we plant the trees. We will definitely be planting something.
Yeah, and I know that student activities, as our dear friend Cassandra Fluker, is typically very on the sort of the cutting edge of making sure there are events happening related to these topics, if not lectureships, then ways to come together and clean up the campus, et cetera. So as we get more information about some of those activities and events, we will certainly share them on WHFR and the WHFR Journal, Ellen. And, you know, we're still early in Earth Month, as we call it, but April 22nd, of course, Earth Day itself. Typically, the school does some type of special, significant event in order to just kind of get people to start thinking about it. And Liz, you mentioned the Student Environmental Association, which is, again, a wonderful organization for our campus students to get involved in that are interested in some of these projects and initiatives. And one of the things that they did a couple of years ago, just to give you an idea, Alan, in particular, and our listeners, of sort of changing that mindset. The goal is to not tell people they're right or wrong, but to just try to make some awareness to you know, sort of anti-apathy kind of stuff. And one of the things that they did as a project was encouraging the sort of conservation of paper towel usage. Many of our restrooms on campus, I see students, they pull out, you know, 5 yards of paper towels and wipe to, you know, their little hand on it, and then it's in the garbage can. Even something as simple as putting like those little stickers that say, "These come from trees," on the paper towel container, just to get somebody to think before they take out 6 yards when they only need, you know, a foot to dry their hands. And so something as simple as that is starting to help, at least help people make informed choices. That we're a school, for crying out loud. Our objective is getting students to make informed, educated choices. Why wouldn't or shouldn't we be doing this when it comes to things that are impacting all of us, not only as a school community, but as, you know, as a world at large. So excited about what the Student Environmental Association is doing. And as you mentioned, Liz, some of the classes, the environmental classes that are involved in proactive approaches to getting people to feel like they can make a significant difference. And this stuff, it ripples, you know, like waves in the water, and that effect can be very long lasting if we do it the right way. So really, really excited about what's happening. And it's a good place to be, so that we're not just frustrated, but we're using the frustration towards, making, literally as hokey as it sounds, making the world a better place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When we talk about reimagining projects and things, there are programs going on with the energy tech people on our campus. We have wind energy stuff being developed. We're talking solar, and those are the bigger things. And Alan, I know, as you know, when we, you know, and nowadays, if you're going to build a new building or something, everything is different than when all of our buildings in Henry Ford were
built in a completely different era. Yes, things like green roofs and solar panels on top and all those sorts of things. And what kind of voice does this particular committee, Sustainable HFC, have when those decisions are being made? Because, you know, as we know, there's always something going on. There's something being built. There's something being renovated. Where do you get a chance to sort of get your little 2 cents in order to, you know, impact that positive change?
Well, we're fortunate to have the support of our dean of the School of STEM, Janice Gilliland. She's a member of Sustainable HFC also, so she can sometimes be our conduit for these conversations with other departments, especially with the integrated energy master plan and our facilities department. She can help move things along and make those recommendations.
Yeah. And in addition, we understand that sometimes retrofitting stuff is more costly than starting from scratch. So sure. We recognize we're not going to be able to do certain things that in the moment will be helpful, but maybe not financially as efficient as in a whole rebuild when the time comes. So some of this is sort of patience and picking your battles too, frankly. But it seems like there's always something that we can be focusing on and thinking about to keep our mindset sort of sustainable in this Sustainable HFC committee. I don't ever feel like we're just spinning our wheels, Liz. And I think that's a good thing. That speaks volumes to the abilities that this committee has to share the information and to do enough where we're feeling like we are making a difference. And I think not every committee gets the pleasure to say that, frankly. I don't just mean at our school, but I mean anywhere. So it's not just talking and complaining. It's actually, you know, being respected for initiatives and sharing a part of the burden, but also the being a part of the solution. And I think that's really to be commended. Our administration has been very wonderful with us for that. And it's a very diverse group too, isn't it, so far? And we'll be doing a recruitment drive when we get back in the fall. So be on the lookout for that. And we already have a website where you can get some information about projects that we've been doing and so on. But I love the makeup of our organization, Liz, and maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
We do have people from all over the place. Different people will pop in. We have someone from facilities, people from faculty members, administration, SSA members. Sometimes students will pop in. It's open to everyone, and we love to have everyone there. It's a very diverse group, like you said, Susan.
So you mentioned administration, and I'm sure that our outgoing president would have loved to have one of those electronic or electric car charging stations for his vehicle. I've seen him come in and out of the parking lot, so I'm just going to say that. You know, what would you be hoping for as we move to a new administration at HFC, and any opportunities that you have that you think you might have going forward to advance the cause of a sustainable HFC in what we look for as a new, you know, president and leader of the college?
Well, I know that we are not going to be left behind with the electric car charging station wave. We're Henry Ford College, right?
Right?
So we will be seeing those stations here. It might not be in the next year, but it will probably be sooner rather than later. And I know that that's an important part of the future of transportation.
Mobility, transportation, mobility, however you want to look. Yes, correct. I think they're kind of used interchangeably now. And and your vision, would that include things like, you know, electric vehicles on campus for security and things like that? I mean, obviously, we see them driving around all over the place,
sure.
And they do a great job doing what they're doing. Do they need to be burning fossil fuels while they do that?
Yeah, and when the weather's nice, I know that our campus safety people have some bicycles that they ride around, which we love to see, not using gas. So, yeah, just anything that is in that direction, I know that we would love to see that.
Yeah, those are all so important. And again, just reiterating that it's sort of no mission is too big and no mission is too small when we're evaluating and analyzing and trying to make a difference. So that's a wonderful, I think, very encompassing mindset, and one that I've found at every meeting with Sustainable HFC and with most people on our campus in general. Again, I don't know if progressive is the right word, but we've got a pretty smart group of employees, faculty, staff, administrators, and students. And when we can look at issues that are going on around us, looking at facts of how some things that we're doing are negatively impacting, and other things that we're doing that are positively impacting our world, and our footprint, taking projects, analyzing them, learning about them, researching them, That's the academic way to make a difference. And there are learning opportunities throughout this entire process. And I'm excited that the college community and the campus community has gotten behind that and is not only willing to, but very eager to incorporate projects and things for the purpose of, you know, building brighter futures. And that's a part of our mission statement at HFC for our student body. So we're doing the right thing, and I hope we'll just continue to keep doing more of it with other help and support as well.
Well, some of them are big picture issues, electric vehicles, solar panels, stuff like that. Other things are a little smaller, battery recycling, non-plastic straws, whatever form they may take, and you know, where to recycle your plastics, or simply refilling your water bottles with reusable water bottles as well. So congrats to the Sustainable HFC Committee. Once again, hfcc.edu/sustainability is a place to learn more about activities going on here on campus. And obviously, yes, as we work our way towards Earth Day 2 weeks from today, maybe we'll have some more issues and things to talk about when it comes to that, whether it's planting trees or anything else that that comes up as regards sustainable activities here at Henry Ford College. Yeah. One of the things we do hope will happen is that we will sustain WHFR as a voice for all of these great things going on here at Henry Ford College. So, Susan, you're going to have to sort of be like, get out of your superwoman cape, saving the world and the environment, and come back to saving WHFR as we continue on this fundraising edition of the WHFR Journal during Radiothon.
Proud to do it. And thank you again, Liz Hall-Knight, for your time today. Continued success with what you're doing in the School of STEM and with Sustainable HFC. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
This is the WHFR Journal Radiothon in effect as we wrap up things here for today's program. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Stay tuned as we continue to make waves. Make some of your own by getting a hold of us during this Radiothon edition of the WHFR Journal.
Thank you for supporting our 2022 Radiothon Pledge Drive. Hi, my name is Bill Keith. I'm the host of Light from the Underground, heard on Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. You can give now at 313-845-9676 or online at WHFR.fm. I began back in 1997, and I had no idea that 25 years later I would still be here with this amazing opportunity to select music and to share music with you, our loyal listeners. It's an amazing opportunity, and I have to thank Henry Ford College for making this radio station possible, and also you, our loyal listeners. Your gift of support makes it possible for other folks like me to step into the studio and share a wide variety of music. You can continue to support non-commercial radio at Henry Ford College through your gift now. The number to call, 313-845-9676, or you can give online at WHFR.fm. And thank you for your support.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal Special Radiothon 2022 edition. Susan McGraw here, along with Alan Mazurek, my co-host, show producer, and jack of all trades. Alan, it's been quite a week during Radiothon here, and we are very grateful and just really, really proud of the fact that we have listeners sharing their support this week with their pocketbooks. And again, most appreciated. We run a very lean ship at WHFR through the support of our college administration. Of course, we are able to sustain some of the things that it requires to take a radio station from, you know, day to day, but we couldn't do it without the support of our community. So we are so grateful that you are listening to our call to action and actually following suit. So thank you for that. We promised something big as we sort of wrap up the week, and we still got another day as we move through Radiothon, but we promised that we would bring somebody in that we thought that you needed to know if you didn't, and if you already do, well, maybe in a more intimate way. So very excited, and let's just jump in, Alan, if that's okay with you.
That's fine by me. Yep.
Yay. Let's jump in. We are very proud to welcome to our airwaves, and really, as is the tradition and has been for 37 years at WHFR since we've been broadcasting live, to welcome he's the head honcho in the city of Dearborn, our newly elected and seventh mayor of Dearborn, Mayor Abdallah Hamoud, to our airwaves. This is a first official welcome to you, Mayor. We hope first of many to come, where we'll have chances to talk about all the things that are important to us, to you, and to this community, this wonderful community. But in the spirit of Radiothon, we're thrilled to have you here, and we say welcome to WHFR.
No, thank you so much. And you set a high expectation, and so I'm feeling the pressure to hopefully deliver here at the end of the week.
And no pressure. We know that no pressure to the new mayor, right? As if you don't have enough pressure already. We are thrilled to welcome you, and as we get to know each other a little bit beyond the things that we've been following through your 10 plus years in serving our community as state representative in the Michigan House of Representatives, representing Dearborn, as well as the many committees and organizations that you've been involved in, both personally and professionally. Not to mention your relationship with our wonderful, esteemed president, who is outgoing, sad to say, but still for at least another, 2 months, our president, Russ Cavalluna. So we've had the pleasure of getting to know you sort of from the sidelines, but really, really thrilled to have you here today. You have spoken to so many important topics in your sort of pre-official, position as mayor, in your speeches, in your campaigning and so on, things like infrastructure, public health and safety, better services with lower taxes, all the things that we know are important to a community. But so many other things that tend not to be the hot button topics or the big buzz kinds of things. That's often what we're interested in here at WHFR. Our station is a little bit different, a little bit unique in that we don't play the popular hits. We don't play commercials. We try to sort of march to the beat of a different drummer. So going a little bit, down into some of those other avenues, one component that I find fascinating that you have a history with, and I'd like to get your comments on, also related to the first interview that our listeners enjoy, where we talked about our sustainable HFC committee here at the college. Liz Hall Knight was our guest in the first half of our show. But you were elected as the youngest member of the environmental advocacy group, the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. And when we talk about conservation advocacy, Michigan, those are important terms, and you have been involved in that since at least 2014, probably personally before that. But tell us a little bit about your approach and your thoughts and your mission to make us a greener, a more sustainable, and therefore a longer living community.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that. And it's an extremely important topic. For me, it was getting involved not by choice. I'm someone who grew up alongside all my siblings with severe asthma, and somebody who, and later in life, asthma returned, and was back on my inhaler. And I think at the goal, if I can start there, the goal is for all of us to grow and raise our family in an environment that fuels our imagination and not that asthma. Yet, if you look in the city of Dearborn, the South End, which borders Southwest Detroit, we're the asthma epicenter, where asthma rates are 2 to 4 times greater than the rest of the state of Michigan. And so what do we do? I think, from a 50,000 foot level, we have to talk about zoning practices. We have to talk about how our zoning gives way to these industrialized regions and these corporate polluters, which continue to just act, not in the best interest of the surrounding public health. But through that environmental laws of sustainability and green practices, what we want to try to do is change that zoning. So you can give way more to residential, to commercial, to business, things of that nature, to maybe environmentally friendly industry. Incentivize the use of renewable energies and start transitioning out of what we've been doing for so long. More so also on the environmental side, we got to talk, it's hard to talk about environmental impact without talking about climate change. And here in the city of Dearborn, certainly the catastrophic flooding of last year, where in a city where we have roughly 35,000 homes, 20,000 residents experienced flooding, including myself and my family. And we have to ask ourselves, why is that, the case? And it's because of one, obviously, the human impact and how we were a catalyst to the climate change and the climate crisis. But another aspect of that is also the pavement that we've just been putting everywhere. The marginalized green spaces that we have, particularly everywhere east of Greenfield. And so what we're planning here at the city and what we've been working on, since my time at the League of Conservation Voters, is how do you incentivize green buildings? How do you incentivize the construction of biking and hiking pathways? How do you incentivize the reduction of these paved roads, which produce runoff and just add more water to your storm stormwater system, which, adds to the problem, the growing problem we have as it pertains to flooding and such. So there are so many issues to talk about. Ultimately, it's a cultural conversation that we have to address. We have to adopt green practices culturally, and we have to adopt them at the population scale level. It's not enough for one of us to recycle. It's not enough for one neighborhood or one block to recycle. This is something that has to be citywide, statewide, countrywide, globally adopted in order for us to really impact and make a difference.
Yeah. Mayor Hammoud, when we introduced you, we said we weren't going to get into too many heavy things. And then I asked you probably the most in the history of the world.
The only one that's going to impact us for the next 100 or so years, probably.
Yeah, right. Couldn't help myself. I had to jump in there. But you certainly, as we're getting to know you, have a mindset of, here's the issue. Let's look outside of the box to see what we can do to try to solve this. And many mayors before you have come through with different issues, and some have sort of circled up and down and keep coming back around. But as Dearborn's seventh mayor, did you come in with a very, very, very specific agenda, or are you tending to be more, let's just kind of see how things go and let's just listen and just kind of get the vibe of what this office is bringing with it? What was your approach coming in? We can ask you that now that you've been with us for a little while.
Yeah, you run with an agenda. And so I certainly had an idea based on polling and knocking on tens of thousands of doors throughout the city. But what's different is when you walk in, the books are opened up in front of you. And so what you thought was the case tends to change because now you have the reality. You know, you can assume that change is required. We have some dire needs. But then when you walk in and you see, I always spoke about in the campaign that the hole is deep here in the city of Dearborn. We have some problems we have to address. Then when I walk in, I realize, the hole is really deep and there are a lot of issues. And so while you have some, while you have maybe policy priorities, you also have to be nimble and understand that things change on a day to day. And that, something that you thought you were going to focus on in day one, you're still going to be focusing on, but there's 10 other issues that come and have to be resolved within the next 2 weeks. Right now we have a budgetary situation that we're trying to deal with and many others. And so while I'm still focusing on, the climate crisis, on sustaining our services, on improving the overall quality of life for residents, I'm also making sure that I'm addressing employee morale, that I'm working to address a budget deficit, that I'm working with developers that are walking through our doors about what ideas they have for the city of Dearborn. So you have to be able to do all this at once.
Well, there are those, as you mentioned, once you open the books and see the things that you didn't know, but maybe even from the positive side, maybe some of the opportunities that you, and maybe you're still learning about, after obviously representing the community at the State House of Representatives for a number of years, but being in that mayor's chair, some of the opportunities, maybe is there anything in particular you didn't even consider, over the course of the election that you've learned over the past few months?
Absolutely. I think one of the things I was surprised about is, the city owns a lot of property. And when you own that property, right, it's like, there's a double-edged sword. One, you're giving up a portion of property taxes you could be collecting if somebody else owned this. But on the flip side, you control the destiny of this property. And so we own some sizable parcels of land at some very key neighborhoods, which we're trying to think outside the box on how do we use these parcels of land to address some serious problems. The question I throw at my directors and my executive staff is, what problem are we solving? That has to be the question that we're asking ourselves before we're moving forward with any decision. So when I walked in, we met with our real estate agency, and they gave me a list of all the parcels they have for sale and who they expect to purchase these parcels. And I'll give you an example. We have this 30-acre parcel on the east end of the city that borders the south end of the city. And they said, yeah, we imagine putting a trucking plant right here. And I said, okay, so what does a trucking plant do for me as a city? And their jaws just dropped. They said, what do you mean by that? We want us to sell land. We're here to sell land. And I said, there has to be selling land with a purpose. And so we actually pulled that parcel of land off the list because I said, this is a potential detention basin. This is a potential bioswale. This is a potential new green space. This is a potential site where we swap land with some dirty industry in the middle of neighborhoods and put them here on their own isolated island to get them out of the neighborhoods away from families. And so there's so many more ideas. So I think that's been the greatest opportunity that I've seen, at least in my first few months here in office.
Are you good at the game of chess, Mayor Hamoud? Because you sound like you should be or would be.
I was on the chess team in fourth grade. I was A1 in fourth grade and have not played since. Periodically, as is Dearborn tradition, you'll see a few of us meeting up at Donutville at night playing a game of chess here and there. So we invite all to participate.
Yeah, and you say you haven't played since fourth grade, but I'm doing chess in air quotes, right? Chess, if you know what I mean.
Correct.
Yeah, different approach there. We are speaking to Dearborn Mayor Abdallah Hamoud in our WHFR's Radiothon Week 2022. We are so pleased and proud to have our voice through Henry Ford College, former Henry Ford Community College, which has been certainly just a wonderful relationship. The college has been kind and respectful of our programming choices over the years, and they've also been incredibly supportive when we've had concerns and needs and things. So it's been really a match made in heaven, and we're so proud to be the mouthpiece for our campus community and our community at large as a community station as well. You are no stranger to Dearborn, not only professionally and politically, but also personally, having come through the Dearborn Public School System and attending University of Michigan. How important is it for you, and how much pressure is there to keep the legacy of what Dearborn is, you know, was and could be, you know, at the forefront for you personally as a citizen of this beautiful community?
Absolutely. I'll also add, I also attended Henry Ford College, right? Completed my first 30-some college credits at Henry Ford College. And just a fun story, my first class, I think I was a sophomore in high school taking world religions, and I was 15 at the time, looking very young. And I sat in the class before the professor started. He looked over to me, and he's like, son, he's like, are you lost? Do you need me to call your mother? And I was like, no, I'm the student. And yeah, my feet weren't able to touch the ground sitting in my chair. That's just how small I was. But nonetheless, to your point about, you know, the legacy of Dearborn, you know, what I realize is when you come into office, you inherit a few things. One is the collective aspirations for what Dearborn could be. Second is also the responsibility for some of the city's actions in the past. You know, so Dearborn has a mixed legacy. We're obviously, I think we're the greatest city in the world. Let me start by saying that. This is the place I've only known to call home, and the place I'm raising my family, you know, my wife and my beautiful, few month old daughter. But we have to accept that Dearborn at some point in time had a very dark history in terms of, its racism and its bigotry and exclusion of other minority communities. And we have to reckon with that. But the city is also known of having these strong mayor systems, which tend to deliver for the residents. I think that's something that we're looking to sustain. How do we make sure that we provide services through an equitable fashion, an equitable lens, to improve the quality of life for all of our residents? So the bar is set high. And I'm hoping to deliver. And the reality is, you know, my daughter came shortly after the election. And when I'm in office now, before we make any key decision, internally I'm thinking, does this decision make the life of my daughter better? And that's really what drives me more so now, more than ever. I want to make sure that we leave Dearborn in a position where the young people of today have far greater opportunity here in this city than I ever had or those who came before me. And that's hopefully the goal and the expectation.
Now, building on experience in the State House of Representatives, what and certainly when you talk about budget and, discovering some of those issues about the city of Dearborn itself, what role do you think Lansing plays in how qualified, obviously you are at this point with that experience of maybe building on some of that experience there to keep the city, whatever they're able to do to help the city.
Absolutely. You know, politics, one, is a full contact sport. And like any full contact sport, you need to make sure that you have a strong team. And that team comes in many forms. There's a team of my appointees and employees that are here 9 to 5. But there's also the team as it pertains to your network and the relationships that exist. And so as it pertains to Lansing, I come with a lot of relationships that currently exist in Lansing, at the county, at the federal government. And you, monetizing those relationships, I hate to say it that way, But sometimes when you're in need of resources to move forward a special project, it comes down to, you know, one, can you make the pitch? Two, do you have the relationships to make that pitch? You know, do you know who to pick up the phone and call? Because sometimes who people perceive as the key players, it might actually, you know, it's not necessarily, here's what I learned. As a state rep, if I wanted something done, I didn't necessarily always go to the other state rep. I went to their chief of staff or to their policy director, to the people who are actually doing the work. And so if you know in Lansing who's actually doing the work, it opens up a whole lot more doors to potentially understanding the resources you can leverage for your community. And I think that's the importance of, you know, having been in Lansing, being able to use those relationships, hopefully in a positive way now in this new role.
One of the things that that I've seen about, certainly in your first few months, you know, in office here in Dearborn, is something that's kind of like right around the corner from us here at the Henry Ford College campus in this middle ground of Dearborn, which is sort of reimagining that Fairlane Town Center space. Yes. And trying to take advantage of opportunities that we think are there. Maybe explain a little bit about that and what you hope can happen there.
Absolutely. That was actually the meeting I was at before this meeting.
All right. Very good. You know, hot off the presses. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the vision of Fairlane Mall is that is Midtown. That is the center of our city. That connects East and West. That connects Ford and Michigan Avenue. It's across the street from our college campuses. It's home to student housing. And what is missing, what's lacking is really our city is really lacking a center community space. Where residents can come together from all four corners. And I think Midtown can be it. Let me first start by saying, I think that means the mall stays as a mall, but the 8,500 parking spaces we have around the mall can be transformed. And they're transformed for many reasons. One, you know, from a public health, environmental justice perspective and an environmental sustainability perspective, those parking spaces are just producing a bunch of runoff that's entering our sewer system, leading to, you know, greater flooding issues. But imagine having a green space, a festival space. Maybe there's a training space for some of the sports teams, whether at Henry Ford College or U of M Dearborn. Maybe there's an amphitheater space to hold outdoor concerts and outdoor gatherings. I think you can bring in mixed-use housing and affordable housing to the area. I think you can create a respectable transit center. The bus stop at Fairlane Mall is actually the second, I think it's the second busiest transit center in Southeast Michigan, yet it's not a respectable transit center. We tend to, you know, there tends to have been a negative connotation associated with public transit, and I think we have an opportunity to rectify that and bring dignity to those who are using public transit. And so for me, when I imagine Fairlane Mall, I imagine it being a, you know, an economic, having be an economic solution, a public health solution, environmental sustainability solution, affordable housing solution. All with the land that's there. And so what we're doing is we're reimagining the space, and then we're going to try to incentivize the developers, the future owners of the mall, and those in, stakeholders in the city to come to the table and say, hey, as a city, we're willing to put up our money. We're willing to leverage potentially county dollars and state dollars if you're willing to match us in these one, two, and three spaces. The city doesn't own any of the property, yet we have the levers that we need to hopefully drive a vision. And I think that's what's been missing for so long. Oftentimes what you find is a mayor will take a back seat and say, the developers own the property, let them develop. What we're saying on this specific project is we want to be in the driver's seat to hopefully develop the vision that we think gives back to the whole surrounding community.
We love that mindset as Henry Ford College itself is future driven.
Absolutely.
The opportunity to be future driven in the political sense as well is certainly going to bode well for this community that we so much love and represent as well. Mayor Hammoud, it's been a pleasure getting to know you in this short duration today. We look forward to opportunities to get deeper into some of the topics that we presented today, as well as others. And we know that you bring with you a measure of not only zeal and enthusiasm, and that's not just youth. I sense and suspect that is your personality and will probably stay that way for many years to come, but also success with things like the Miller Rotunda Bridge Project, $100 million investment that you so successfully negotiated, as well as so many other things that are coming in from your previous time in office. in a different capacity. So we are so grateful to let our listeners get a little peek into what you're doing on a daily basis to help make this community better and brighter for all. And we thank you for your time in doing so today. But, you know, we are primarily a music station. Of course, we do interviews and local things. We don't do the big stuff because other places do that. We like to do the stuff that impacts our community. We are a community radio station, and we celebrate that that relationship with our community. So we have to get you in the hot seat for just 1 minute longer and talk a little bit about your musical taste, your musical interests, because, you know, people want to know these things about their mayor.
Absolutely.
Any special formats you're into or musical talents that you might have that we don't know about?
If you were to go through my YouTube playlist, you're going to find absolutely, you're going to question who is this person and do 10 different people use this account. And the truth is, it's just, in the morning, I listen to something. In the afternoon, I listen to something. Sometimes my wife will criticize what I'm listening to, but that's a whole other conversation. But here's what I'll say. In the Arab culture, we have something called zejel, which is basically poetry. But what they do is they actually sing the poetry. And so I like to listen to that. And my father-in-law, when he first discovered, I listened to some of the folks from back in the 50s and 60s. He's like, how old are you? So I do that. I love, you know, the traditional Arabic orchestra. And so I also appreciate that music. More on the Western side, I appreciate motivational rap. And so if there is meaningful rap that kind of gets you going, you're listening, you know, people who are strong storytellers talking about struggle growing up, something which I relate to, I tend to adopt that. It's really all over the place. I listen to just about everything with the exception of jazz and not much country. Everything else, you know, Linkin Park in my high school days on the wrestling team. I've been to the Goo Goo Dolls concert. I've been to many a music festival, electronic and dance festivals. There's just about nothing that I have not listened to or been a part of. My wife is probably Michael Jackson's number one fan. And she got me onto Motown music. And so she has a playlist that she built out for me, curated, where I got to learn of Motown music. You name it, and I just about listened to it.
Good answer. Thank you for taking that like a course. We appreciate
it. Of course.
Oh, Mayor Hammoud, it has been wonderful to get to know you today here on the WHFR Journal. Thank you so much for stopping by on this special Radiothon edition of the WHFR Journal. And to you and your family, a blessed Ramadan as well. Thank you for being with us here this Friday afternoon.
Thank you so much. Thank you again for having me.
This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. We're going to wrap things up. Kitty Love comes up in just a little bit to take us on a trip down Highway 61. Some Radiothon blues for your Friday afternoon here as we make waves here on WHFR.
Radiothon is WHFR's once-a-year pledge drive. While other stations ask for help more than one time a year, we only interrupt our programming for a single week each year. This year, we incurred some equipment upgrade expenses, and we're asking for your help replenishing our rainy day fund. With your gift at 313-845-9676, option 1, or at our website, whfr.fm, you can continue to enjoy the unique programming only found on the station making waves, 89.3 whfr.fm.
It's time to start thinking about warmer days and more time outside. On sunny days, think about how great it would be to be wearing a pair of slide flip-flop sandals with your favorite radio station printed right on the Velcro strap. For a gift during this Radiothon of $60, we will send you a thank you gift that includes these comfortable blue slide-on sandals. Calling 313-845-9676 and selecting option 1 will get you this thank you gift as part of our Rainy Day Fund replenishment efforts. If you'd like a new pair of flip-flop sandals and want to support WHFR with a gift of $60, please call now, 313-845-9676, option 1. If you are unable to call now, at your convenience, you can also go to our website, whfr.fm, to make a secure donation online. This is the station making waves and getting you ready for the beach during our once-a-year Radiothon pledge drive, whfr.fm.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.